Hope you had a good afternoon. And thanks again for the opportunity that you give me so many times to stand before you and preach the glorious gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm breaking in a new Bible here, so it might not stay open like I want it to. Jesus talked, and he taught while he was in the world. He was both the Word and spoke God's Word. He was a master teacher and a powerful preacher. When he finished his sermons, people were amazed at his teaching, and they were often moved in several ways. Jesus spoke good news, the gospel of the kingdom, the good news of salvation. He told that good news to people who were proud and sinful, and he told it to people who were hurting and humble. His teaching moved, and it impressed. One time, Jewish leaders sent officers to arrest Jesus, but they returned without him. They were questioned about that. They said, "Nope, not going to arrest him. You go down and listen to him. We've never heard anybody speak like that. We're not going to take him." And they didn't. And even down to our day, we have reliable records of Jesus' words. You can just check out your red letter editions to see them for yourself. Or better yet, you can read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Jesus addressed many topics while he was in the world, but one in particular that we will consider this evening is the subject of money and material things. By one count, 16 of 38 parables were concerned with how to handle money and possessions. And one out of every 10 verses in the gospel deals in some way with the subject of money. That's 288 verses, if you're interested in that sort of thing. So we obviously need to consider this topic, and we need to consider it often, if at least. And I have chosen for us to do that this evening by turning to Jesus' great Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 6, and the paragraph that begins in Matthew 6 at verse 19. The words of Jesus in his great sermon. "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." So first, in verses 19 through 21, Jesus talks to us about treasures. He talks about treasures, what we value, what determines and decides some things about us. And you'll see here that he floats out three ideas connected with treasure. The first is that we lay up treasure for ourselves. For ourselves. We make investments of some kind in things which we hope will get some return, have some benefit for us. We lay up treasures for ourselves. Second, he says, we lay up treasures somewhere. And he gives us the options. They are either on earth or in heaven. Jesus noted that what is on earth is subject to decay and destruction, and what is in heaven is not so subject to those things. So we have treasure for ourselves that we locate somewhere. And Jesus said, third, that has something to do with your heart, that your treasure involves your heart. For where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be. We put our hearts into what we think is really important and what we value. So our treasure relates to where and how we spend our resources and our energies. It is what we value the most. It is what we put our hearts into. Our treasures, Jesus said, control us. They tug at our thoughts and they tug at our emotions. They consume our planning, our dreaming, and working. So what all of us do is we make investments in things, and we make investments in what we believe are valuable things. If you learned that a house you were thinking about buying had swarms of wasps around the exterior and had raccoons in the attic, had leaks under a couple of faucets, and three doors wouldn't close, and that was just a superficial look, would you be interested in that house? Would you invest your money in that place? I'm guessing that probably you would not. Or what if a company's stock closed lower and lower as days passed, and then you heard that the CEO got canned? Would that be your stock of choice as a good investment? Nobody invests in commodities like these. They're not good investments. But many of us do such investing when it comes to choosing whether it is on earth or in heaven. Now, we all know that living in this world on earth has its requirements. We have to have food and clothing and shelter. But Jesus urges us here to think about the place or the location that these things have in life. He knows, we know, we have to have these things. But what place do they occupy? Are we all about clothes and cars and houses and vacations and retirement? If so, we're making a big mistake, because Jesus says these things will ultimately come to nothing. They're on earth things, and that's where they'll always be. And when we've left this earth, they're still going to be here. So if we spend our life going after all this, when all is said and done, what do we have? And the answer is nothing, absolutely nothing. This was the mistake of the prosperous farmer we read about in one of those parables of Jesus in Luke chapter 12. Had a good year, good crops, huge harvest, wonderful time. What did he do? How did he invest it? He had to do something with this abundant harvest. Well, his decision was that he would tear down the barns he had, build bigger barns, for the purpose of, I will take my ease, eat, drink, and be merry. It was all about himself. I is the focus of what the prosperous farmer said. It was his rest, his pleasure, his future in this world. So we look at this fella, and he may have been prosperous and had a lot of things. And he may have been an astute businessman that was admired by others. And he may have been the envy of his neighbors. But God, who has the last word, God said he is a fool. And in fact, he says, tonight your soul is required of you. Tonight everything you've invested, all this, will be in the possession of somebody else. And who that will be and what they will do with it, you have no influence or choice in that matter. But tonight you'll stand before God and you'll give him an accounting. The God about whom you have not been rich at all while you lived in this world. So maybe prosperous, maybe astute, maybe the envy of his neighbors, but God said he's a fool. So based upon that idea and other principles that Jesus set forth, he is direct in our passage this evening. He gets right to the point. He doesn't dance around the idea. He isn't vague or unclear. He says you need to lay up treasure in heaven. Lay up treasures in heaven. Now, he doesn't name these, but surely they would include things such as doing good, showing kindness and compassion, forgiving, sharing, giving to the work of God, and things along this line, treasures in heaven. So what must we do? Well, we have to take a look at what we really want, what we spend the majority of our time and energy, what governs our lives. When you identify that, you're looking at your treasure. And when you identify your treasure, you're face to face with the heart of the matter. You're face to face with your heart. And that will help us to answer the question honestly, is it on earth? Or is it in heaven? Jesus said there's only one right choice. Lay up for yourself treasures in heaven. Don't set your mind on things above. Paul will later say in Colossians 3, things below, but rather set your mind on things above. So, Jesus and treasures. Now he moves to the next idea, Jesus and focus. He used treasures to make his first point. He used a lamp to make his second point. So what does a lamp do? Everybody knows that. It gives light. And where does it give light? Well, wherever it, in whatever area the lamp is located, a room usually, that's where the light does its work. It illumines that area. Without it, that area would be dim and maybe even in the dark. We have an illustration of that here in our auditorium, as a matter of fact. There are lights that are out that haven't been yet fixed, and those areas are dim. Now, Jesus says everybody knows how a lamp works, how that principle operates. Now let's apply it. He says the eye is the lamp of the body. So what does the lamp do? It illuminates. What does the eye do? It gives off some kind of guidance. The eye does for the body what the lamp does for a room. Now, the lamp may not always do its work, and we may not always have the focus that we should have. Several years ago, I remodeled my office here at the church building with the help of some other people. And in that process, I installed rail lighting in my office, and I had 6 pendant lights and 7 spotlights that were attached to the rails. And they were fixtures that used a G9 bulb. That probably doesn't mean much to many of us, but that's a halogen bulb that's really bright and really hot. And it illumined my office nicely. But over time, the fixtures have decreased. I hit one with a ladder while I was doing something else, and it broke. And then, because the halogen is very hot, the sockets have begun to burn out. So out of 16 fixtures, only 6 are working today. And my office is not nearly as light as it used to be. The lighting system is bad, and I supplement with other lights, as a matter of fact, so I can see the books I'm reading. Well, Jesus' point is that something like that can happen in our lives. It can happen to the light that lamps our body and our life. Jesus uses the word unhealthy and healthy, or bad and good. It's interesting that these are words that are used also in other places to refer to what's generous, if it's healthy, or what's stingy, if it's unhealthy. And that ties Jesus' words here to our subject that we're talking about this evening. So the point seems to go like this. Just as our eye affects our whole body, so our ambition, our focus, where we fix our eyes and our heart, that affects our whole life. Where we focus affects where we go, what we do, what we think. A noble and single-minded focus is a guiding light for everything else we do. I think that's the point that Jesus is making. A single-minded focus is a guiding light. So, what do? Our bodies go where our eyes are looking. Our lives are shaped by our focus. So we have to ask the question. Jesus said there's a good focus and a bad focus. There's a healthy one and an unhealthy one. So we have to ask ourselves the question, are our eyes good or bad? Are they clear or are they clouded? Well, a good eye is one that's clear. It's focused. Jesus is talking about, I think, a singular determination, a commitment in a particular area. I think about Mary. Luke chapter 10, Jesus visited the home of Mary and Martha, and that was a special occasion, it must have been, and Martha took up her role as one practicing hospitality, and she busied herself with those things, which was good, but Mary chose a different part. She chose to sit at Jesus' feet and listen to his words. Now, Mary wasn't up to. She knew that serving had to be done. She knew that hospitality was something that they wanted to extend, but she made a choice. She focused on something. And Jesus said it was good. And he said it won't be taken away from her. In that instant, she had a good eye. I think about Paul in Philippians chapter 3. He talks about his Jewish pedigree, born in a certain tribe, circumcised at a certain time. Everything was just right in his pedigree. As far as just keeping the law, it was wonderful. But he said, I now understand that all that's just trash, and I give it all up because I want to gain Christ and know him and be found in him. And then he says this in Philippians chapter 3, later in the chapter. He says, this one thing I do, I'm focusing on this, forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead. I press on toward the goal of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Philippians chapter 3. And so he was focused on that. That's what a good eye is. That's what a healthy eye is. But then there's the bad one that's clouded. You know what it does? It wanders and it wavers. It's distracted and it divides. And it brings darkness to your life. In fact, Jesus said, if then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? By which I understand him to be saying, if we're focused on the wrong thing, that's a really bad mistake. So let's pause to make some application to money and material things. Jesus is saying here that how we see money and material things, how we view them, what we think about them, is determinative. It's significant because how we think about these things determines how we view God and how we live life. What we focus on determines a lot about us. It determines whether our heart is devoted or it's divided. So, do we see money as a tool, or do we see it as a goal? Think about that. Do we understand it as something to provide and share, and not just to control and collect? Let that go over in your mind. Well, let's listen to God about this matter. Ephesians 4. Let the thief no longer be a thief. Let him who stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his own hands what is good, so that he may have something to share with those who are in need. So Jesus through his apostles said, don't steal, but work to have to share. So is that our focus? Listen to him again in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Then verses 17 to 19. As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, not to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. 1 Timothy 6, verses 17 to 19, if you want to take that reference down. So let's listen to God on this matter and think about our focus. Think about our eye and where it is guiding us in our lives in this world. Well, finally, Jesus talks about devotion. He puts the matter in what I would call a stark contrast. He contrasts a true God and another God that he calls Mammon. But he said, as is always the case, there isn't room for both. He says, you cannot serve God and this other God. You cannot serve God and Mammon. We try, but we can't. So what Jesus does here is he personifies money. He gives it characteristics of a person. I think maybe more accurately we say that he deifies money. He gives it the characteristics of a God. And money is perfectly willing to take that position. It seduces and enslaves. It demands and it dominates. It controls and consumes. So what Paul says in Colossians 3, verse 5, is that greed amounts to what? Who can fill that in? Idolatry. Greed is idolatry. Money will take us in and take us over if we let it. So everybody has to decide. We have to decide what is at our center. What is it we will serve? And behind the choice of the treasure we have, behind the choice of the treasure we have, and behind the choice of the focus of our lives, is a choice of masters. Who will be our master? Because money and material things are always out there, calling, tempting, seducing, wanting to dominate and control. That will always be the case. And so we have to decide what will stand at our center and what we will serve. Behind the choice of treasures and the focus of our lives lies the choice of masters. Jesus is clear. Either we serve things or we serve God. He says unequivocally that we can't do both. I know we try. We try to juggle. We try to excuse. We try to rationalize. But when it's all over, we have to admit the truth of what Jesus says. We can't serve both. I'm looking out among us, and I see people I know and love and appreciate. Most of us, I think, have good jobs, good paying jobs. And I think we all have the necessities of life. If somebody does not have the necessities of life that's a part of our church family, you need to let somebody know, because there are people here who will generously share and make sure you do have the necessities of life. I think most of us do. But we go beyond that. We have also the niceties of life, and some even the luxuries of life. And we need to be sure. We need to be sure that we're laying up treasure in heaven with whatever we have, that we're laying up treasure in heaven and not on earth. We must look closely and clearly and ask ourselves, am I being rich toward God? Is this a matter of tearing down my barns and building bigger barns for my own ease, eat, drink, and be merry, and my retirement? We must think, we must make sure we think in terms of working, to have, to share. That's what Jesus said through Paul, both in Ephesians 4 and 1 Timothy 6. And never in terms of just eating and drinking and being merry ourselves. We need to remind ourselves every day that we brought nothing in and will take nothing out. And someone has said, since we live between two moments of nakedness, we'll be wise to travel light along the way. We brought nothing in and we'll take nothing out. So we must make a concerted effort with what we have to do good, to be rich in good works, to be ready to share, and managing it all so that we may take hold of that which is life indeed. That's what Paul says. Don't miss what's really life. Don't miss what's more important and greater than all that. So what I want for all of us from this passage, what I want for all of us is that we find that the location of our treasure is right. That our looking is clear and our loyalty is decided. So there's a little way that you can remember maybe Matthew 6, 19 to 24. It has to do with location, looking, and loyalty. Where your treasure is located, that's where your heart will be. Where the light is shining in your life, where you're looking, that's where you're going to be going. Nobody has a choice about that. Where you look is where you go. And either we'll serve God or we'll serve something else. And so that's what Jesus said, to help us think clearly and seriously. I think it takes some serious thinking about God and money and the place that each has in our lives. So thanks for studying with me tonight. May God bless us as we study again and think that we might decide to serve God and nothing else and no one else. And maybe we can help someone do that tonight. Wouldn't that be wonderful to see somebody baptized into Jesus Christ and to rejoice with you and with the angels in heaven, with your family and friends in your obedience to Christ, to be joined with him, raised to walk in newness of life. We'll be more than happy to help you with that tonight. Or in any other way, if we can help you meet some spiritual need in making your decision to serve God above all else, we give you our encouragement as we stand to sing this song of invitation.